It's 12:06 and time for Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. If you'd like to join today's conversation, give us a call at 260-452-1185. Email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined in the co-host chair today with Dr. Peter Rothman. Thanks so much for a good start to the new year, our first show of 2013.
Yes, and today we'll be discussing integrative medicine and the role it plays in the prevention and long-term therapy of diseases. So to preface our discussion, I would like to present a quote from the Federal Center for Disease Control and Prevention. They have stated that virtually all human diseases result from the interaction of genetic susceptibility factors and modifiable environmental factors broadly defined to include infections, chemical, physical, nutritional, and behavioral factors. And we have here to discuss the role of integrative medicine in preventing or reducing disease progression and enhancing longevity, Dr. Angela LaSalle, who is the director of integrative medicine at the Parkview Regional Medical Center. Dr. LaSalle has not only a MD degree from the University of Indiana, but has a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing and partake of an integrative medicine fellowship at the University of Arizona under the renowned expert in the field, Dr. Andrew Weil. And we'd like to welcome Dr. LaSalle and ask her, what is integrative medicine?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the public today about integrative medicine. And integrative medicine, it is important to understand that it is more than alternative medicine. I think people are very familiar with complementary and alternative therapies, but true integrative medicine actually takes our typical Western traditional medical training and incorporates that as well with utilizing more natural and alternative types of therapies. So basically it's adding more tools in the toolbox, and we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater with our traditional medical training. So integrative medicine is actually using all of these things. And what we pull for first for clients is, you know, more natural, less invasive types of therapies when those are appropriate. But certainly we're not shy about prescribing a blood pressure medicine or diabetes therapies or heart medicines, whatever we need to do based upon our traditional medical training. So it's a combination of both. It's kind of the best of both worlds. And another way to explain it is oftentimes we see our different medical specialists who we may see a cardiologist or a gastroenterologist or a neurologist that focuses on a particular body system. Integrative medicine also tends to be kind of the mortar between the bricks of those medical specialties and actually focuses on hormonal and cellular communications and strategies to help reduce inflammation and the aging process. So it's a little bit more of a broader focus. Mm-hmm.
And how does working on diet and adequate nutrition, vitamins and supplements, as well as stress reduction and lifestyle techniques, how does it alter inflammation and the oxidative stresses that cause disease and contribute to aging?
Well, I love your CDC quote that you pulled, and thank you for bringing that to the table, because what we are finding is that, you know, our health is a conglomeration of all of the factors that are brought to the table. So first of all, we have our genetics. We have our genetic code. And I tell people, think of that as kind of the hand of cards you've been dealt. But then we have our genetic code that's in play at the moment, and that is our epigenome. And those genes can be turned on and off by these other factors such as nutrition, the amount of inflammation in your body, toxins, stress levels. So there are parts of our genetics that are modifiable. So just because we've inherited a gene for a specific disease doesn't mean that we're destined to develop that particular disease. There are other factors involved that will help to determine whether or not that switch is turned on or off. So when we talk about health, health is the sum of all of those factors coming to the table and the circumstances of which our body is dealing with at the moment.
And there appears to be a new field called nutrigenomics, which delves into the interaction of our diet and our genes. How does this fit together? What are we doing now? And what does the future look like for nutrigenomics and as part of our therapeutic regimen?
It's actually very exciting. And we're right at the cutting edge of deciphering some of these pathways that may help to be disease preventative. And that's the exciting part about it, is when we can prevent disease. But basically, going back to that word picture of kind of the hand of cards that are in play and out on the table at the moment, these genes code for proteins and enzymes. And these enzymes turn on and off the chemical reactions that together make the sum of our metabolism. So it makes the proteins in our body, our neurotransmitters, our inflammatory chemicals, and are major, major players in how our body functions from moment to moment. And some of us have different roadmaps. So if you imagine the superhighway with, you know, the different exits coming off, you know, in some patients, some of those exits are blocked, or there's construction along those zones where there's a slowing or a narrowing in the rate of which those enzymes can function. And some of these things we're able to see with gene SNP testing, that we can see if some of these enzymes are compromised. And then if the patient also has a nutritional deficit that codes for, you know, a vitamin or mineral that is needed for that same chemical reaction, they've got a double hit. Mm-hmm. And so instead of being maybe 50% less effective, they may be down to 10 or 20% efficacy on that enzyme pathway. Well, that affects a lot of things in the body, especially one of the areas that we've looked at in our practice is neurotransmitters as well. And this is an exciting field up and coming in psychiatry and in immunology and endocrinology. When we look at the interplay of these things, at the rate our body's able to step up and make those chemicals. So when you talk about a high stress society in which we need, you know, a higher fight or flight response, we need to be focused, we're multitasking constantly, and then you have a client who has a little bit of a genetic slowdown in that pathway, mm-hmm. and oh, by the way, they're eating the typical American diet, and they're nutritionally depleted, they're low on their B vitamins, they're not getting enough iron and zinc and magnesium, and they're vitamin D deficient because we're inside all the time, we don't get enough sunlight. You know, all these factors together can lead to a very significant disease process in that individual. Mm-hmm. And it's a stacking of the factors. So this is what we're looking at in the next layers of medicine to consider for our clients. And it's more than just prescribing just the typical, oh, take a multiple vitamin and you'll be fine. What we're learning too is we have substances in our food supply that block our absorption of key minerals and nutrients. In our zeal for longer shelf lives and you know, more mass production of food, some of these chemicals that we've added into our food supply are actually working against us.
I want to remind our listeners that you can call in with a question or a comment at 260-452-1185. And if you would prefer not to get on the phone, you can give us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm or continue the conversation at our Facebook page.
Many years ago, when I was in medical school, the simple definition of a vitamin was a coenzyme that allows us to get the most nutrition, energy from the foods we eat. And today, vitamins appear to be playing much greater roles assisting with fighting inflammation and oxidation. Could you speak to us about vitamins, what they are, and the role they play in dealing with free radicals, oxidative stress, and inflammation?
Sure, absolutely. I think the general definition still stands in what a vitamin is. It is a substance that acts as a coenzyme for these pathways, and it can be taken in, you know, through our nutrition, through our diet. The important thing to understand is when we think of our typical multiple vitamin on the shelf is we have picked one form of a particular substance, say B6. This is a common vitamin B6, mm-hmm. Known as pyridoxine in most of the multiple vitamin supplements, is a common form that's used. But what people don't understand and what we're learning about even in medicine is that our body takes these vitamins and it will take it from this form and convert it into another more active form. And there are active metabolites of these things. And so sometimes our slowdown is not in our ability to absorb a particular vitamin, but our slowdown genetically may be that we don't convert the vitamin to the more active form that our cells need. And so when we talk about the difference between, you know, vitamins coming from whole foods, which tend to have more the different types of vitamins versus using a vitamin supplement that may have only one or two forms of a particular substance in it, you know, there's a debate there of, well, where should we get our nutrition? Well, yes, ideally we should get it from the more natural sources because there's more broader bioavailability of those kinds of chemicals, or our body can absorb and use those things more easily. So there's, you know, interesting ways to take a look at these controversies about vitamins. And interestingly, you know, there was a study recently that said that people who take a multiple vitamin have an increased mortality. Well, that may be true, especially when you consider the fact that genetically, some people don't utilize the form of those vitamins very efficiently that typically come in your traditional multiple vitamin. Hmm. So if we go back and take a look at some of these studies, another one that comes to mind is the study about colon cancer and high folic acid. If you have somebody who doesn't take dietary folic acid and convert it to your more active forms, your cells still are deficient on the action of the folate vitamins that they're supposed to have. Mm-hmm. Yet they're getting high amounts dietarily. You say, well, but they're getting too much, but yet their cells aren't getting enough of the action that's needed enzymatically, and so they're at risk. So taking a look at it from that perspective, there's a lot of research then that we can go back and ask additional questions about.
Mm-hmm. So if we're somebody that's just taking a regular daily multivitamin, how or is there a way to make sure that we are taking it correctly and that we're not just, you know, taking a pill and it's just a waste of taking a pill? I mean, how do we track that progress that our body is using these vitamins in the correct way?
Well, the good news and the bad news is that most multiple vitamins are at a dosage where it's not going to do a lot of harm for most people.
Okay.
And then that's why these things are allowed to be massively available on the shelves. The bad news is, you know, most people don't absorb multiple vitamins very efficiently. So you might only be getting about 30% of what you think that you're taking. And when the multiple vitamin is dosed at just at the 100% of the recommended daily allowance of a particular nutrient, you might not be getting what you think that you're getting. Mm. Also, in difference in quality of supplements and things like that, you may have variances there as well. So, it's an interesting debate. I think the most important thing to do is to talk with your physician and look at your risk factors for particular diseases. And this is where family history is important because it's an indirect look at some of those genetic kinds of questions that we have. If there's a family history of particular cancers or particular, you know, heart disease or diabetes, a particular disease process, we can kind of start to get an idea that when inflammation happens in the body, what's there in the genetics may move us a particular direction. And that's really the power of a good family history and working with a clinician who's listening.
Mm-hmm. We have Don online one who has a question about some do's and don'ts when it comes to taking vitamins. Don, welcome to Health 360.
Hi. Yes. And I was wondering if there is, a booklet or information that can be accessed to the layperson concerning do's and don'ts, say if you're going to take a certain vitamin or mineral or supplement. When you should administer it, when it's best, most optimum for uptake, if there are things that will assist the uptake or if there are things that will neutralize it, even to the point of where something may be dangerous to take if you're mixing it with said other supplement, that type of information.
Don,
is there a booklet?
That's an excellent question, and I'll just be very straight with you. I haven't seen anything published that I have come across that really gives the whole picture in regards to supplementation. And again, it depends on the individual, what medications they're on, what their dietary practices are, you know, what kinds of foods you're eating at that particular meal, what minerals you're trying to put together. So there's so many different little do's and don'ts. In general, I think if we're talking about just like a general multiple vitamin, how I usually counsel my patients is, especially if they're on certain medications such as thyroid medicine that contain a mineral that is easily displaced by the minerals that may be in a multivitamin and mineral complex, make sure that they're taking that at least 4 hours away from their prescription medications, because then that will potentially interact. And thyroid hormone is something that's a commonly used medication. But if you take a mineral supplement such as calcium, zinc, iron, magnesium within 3 to 4 hours of your thyroid medicine, you may actually displace some of the iodine off of the thyroid hormone and lose some of the efficacy of the dose. So that's something that I counsel my patients about.
Medicinally, if somebody's taking a medicine, it's really more crucial probably to consult with y'all, with the physician, in order to avoid any the undue process you're speaking of there.
Absolutely, and our pharmacists are also great resources for understanding, you know, when there's a potential interaction between, you know, a supplement and a medication, and that, you know, there's a lot of references that they can take a look at and help to answer those questions as well. So, you know, I use my pharmacy colleagues all the time to answer questions about those kinds of things. But, the thyroid medicine with a multiple vitamin, that's a big deal. Knowing to split up your mineral doses throughout the day versus trying to take all of it at once. The body only absorbs so many milligrams of a substance at a time. So this is especially important with calcium supplementation, which we deal with a lot with our menopausal and women and osteoporosis prevention and even our male patients. So calcium and magnesium, those doses do better when they're split. Certain substances like vitamin D is better to take with a meal. It's better absorbed. So yes, Don, there are lots of do's and don'ts. And, you know, I'll take a look again to see if I can find a good, concise reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be really helpful to many people. And but I will take that back to the drugstore with me when I have a question. I'll consult the pharmacist.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Don. And we have one other caller before we head to a quick break. We have Mary Claire, who is online too. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
You can go
on. I had a question about echinacea. I just turned on the program, so I'm sorry if maybe it's been answered or we're not exactly talking about this. But, mm-hmm. You know, the fact that people say that echinacea is something that can help you when you have a really bad cold, like I have right now. If it's really effective, is it something that we should be taking regularly? That's kind of my question.
Well, echinacea is one that, you know, is a very common supplement and can actually have some immune boosting effects. The debate is, well, should I take it all the time? If it's an immune booster, should I take it all the time? And the answer is probably not. In general, what we see is kind of a decreased efficacy over time. If you take something like echinacea on a regular basis, it's more powerful to be used at the time when your body's trying to fight, which usually is a viral kind of an illness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are different ways to utilize these supplements, Mary. But in general, those kinds of immune boosters, I don't recommend on a day-to-day kind of a basis, but use them more sporadically when someone is feeling like they're coming down with a cold or a flu.
Okay, are there any studies or anything that show that it's actually effective?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Echinacea has kind of a plus minus kind of a profile in the literature. You can find studies for and studies against. One website that I found in particularly helpful is Natural Standards. Mm-hmm. And you can access that even through your hospital library. Hospitals have medical libraries that you can also research and ask questions of your hospital librarian.
Okay, thank you.
To find out some of these things if you have an interest in that.
The other thing to keep in mind is that herbal remedies can also be cross-reactive to natural allergens, and echinacea, by the way, can be a problem for ragweed-sensitive individuals. So we do have botanical cross-reactions between herbs and those people who are pollen sensitive. So keep that in mind, too, if you happen to be an allergic individual taking herbs.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for calling in, Mary. And we need to take a quick break here at Health 360 on WBOI, but we'll be back with more of the program in just a few moments.
Aid worker Quinn Zimmerman went to help in Haiti, but it wore on him.
I try to be understanding, but there's moments where I really have a hard time with it.
Susan Gubar got ovarian cancer and endured a traumatic debulking surgery.
The consequences for the entire family can be catastrophic.
I'm Neil Conan, catching up on some of the stories you heard here in 2012. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOI. The time is 12:30. If you have a question or comment, join us at 260-452-1185. Email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio today with Dr. Peter Rothman, my co-host, and Dr. Angela LaSalle, who is the Medical Director of Integrative Medicine at Parkview Health. And we're talking about integrative medicines and vitamins and supplements and how the body works all together. And we've been kind of on the subject of vitamins the past few minutes before the break. And I want to make sure before we move on to a couple other subjects that we're going to discuss today that we kind of hit home on who should be taking what kind of vitamins. So do you recommend that women make sure that certain vitamins are in their diet versus men? And does that change as we age?
Well, I think probably the biggest difference between women and men as far as nutrients is probably the discussion regarding iron, you know, because of women and their menstrual cycles and potential loss for iron. And iron is a key player in neurotransmitter production as well as hemoglobin and other substances in the body. But so it is a key cofactor for certain enzymes. So we think about women and their menstrual loss. So we say, you know, the women's vitamins should have more iron and the men don't need as much iron. But it's important, you know, men need iron too. And it's with the prevalence of digestive medications and the antacids that are available freely over the counter, you know, we see a lot of situations here where a couple of things happen over time is that we lose our grace for our bad habits nutritionally and exercise-wise. You know, when you're young, your body has a little bit more reserve. And then as time builds, you know, we become even less effective at our the quality of our digestion, our ability to absorb nutrients. We tend to lose the stomach acids and the digestive enzyme production, and therefore not breaking our foods down as well. we tend to eat, you know, faster and on the go as we get into adulthood, more stress, you know, all of those things together leads to a decrease in the quality of absorption of nutrients in our body. And, you know, the longer we are running deficient in a particular nutrient, the more problems that we're going to get into. So, you know, in general, we talk about calcium for women, the prevention of osteoporosis, but, you know, men need a little calcium too. Mm-hmm. And about 2/3 of people are magnesium deficient. So these minerals are, you know, important key players. So I don't focus so much on difference between men and women as much as I focus on those micronutrient deficiencies and what that means for those, for that person's particular risk factors. The loss of estrogen in the body for women is a major, major player for bone loss. And we think that that's about calcium. But then when you look at the prevalence of vitamin D deficiency, that's also a major factor for bone loss as well. So you have to look at all of that together. And I think we somehow pay a little bit more attention to the women, because I think women are the leaders oftentimes in healthcare in the family and seeking these things. And because our menopause is more noticeable, we tend to get a little bit more aggressive recommendations, but men need these things too. Mm. And so it's important. So I think our men kind of get left at the wayside sometimes on some of the preventative strategies that they should be doing in their 50s. Mm.
We have a couple of people who are on the line waiting to ask some questions. We have Della on line one who has a question. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. The question that I had is regarding the use of probiotics. There seems to be so many different commercials and so much, quite a bit of information about taking probiotic pills or trying to make sure that you use or take or eat yogurt that has added probiotic properties to it. And I'm wondering, for one thing, when do you know that you should take that as a supplement, and what kind of impact does it have on things that you take, such as your typical medications for high blood pressure or even vitamins or other supplements?
Della, I am so excited by your question. This is a great topic. We could do an entire show on probiotics. Probiotics are coming to the forefront as being even more important than what we thought. And basically, we have a symbiotic relationship with the bacteria that lives in our gut. And this bacteria is critical to our mineral absorption, our production of B vitamins, and our overall health and stimulation of our immune system to give us a normal acting immune system. So a person who has no bacteria in their gut is very, very unhealthy and unable to mount an appropriate immune system response to other diseases and illnesses. So those little bacteria that are flying around in our colon are critical to good health. And basically your question of who should take a probiotic supplement, and the answer is probably almost everyone. Unless you're severely immunocompromised that your body might not handle the bacteria in a probiotic supplement, if you've ever been on an antibiotic, if you've had a cold or an ear infection or skin infection that you were treated with an antibiotic with, if your diet has been high in processed foods, you know, over time, you've had any digestive issues, most people should be taking some sort of probiotic supplement. And the kind that I recommend is a supplement that contains multiple strains, not just Acidophilus or Lactobacillus by itself, but contains a multiple strain. So it's a comprehensive probiotic. And, you know, the idea of eating yogurt, yes, yogurt contains probiotics, but I have an awful lot of clients that don't tolerate dairy very well. And so I tend to stay away from, you know, the dairy-based, you know, probiotics, and you tend to use a probiotic supplement versus just recommending just straight yogurt for clients. But those probiotics, what we're finding is also may play a role in the aging process, in prevention of cancer and heart disease, autoimmune diseases. So those probiotics are really critical. And I'm really excited about your question.
So there wouldn't really be a problem if you used that as kind of a daily regimen, if you will?
There's no problem with a daily probiotic.
Okay, wonderful.
Again,
thank
and that
you
is
so much.
That is for the majority of people. If someone is immune compromised,
right.
if you've been through, you know, chemotherapy or you're on immune suppressive drugs, again, please check with your physician to see if that's appropriate for you.
Okay. You've been a great help. I appreciate the show and thank you for answering my call.
Thanks for your call, Della. And we have Felix online too, who has a perspective from the pharmacy side. So Felix, welcome to the show and thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate the show and some great guests today. Just wanted to comment on something that Dr. LaSalle pointed out earlier, and that was that the use of herbal supplements can be very beneficial, but can also be a problem with other medications that a patient is taking. For instance, St. John's wort is something that we discussed in pharmacy school extensively with regards to its interaction to other prescription medications that your physician may have put the patient on, insofar as the breakdown and the efficacy of those drugs. And so the idea of making sure that you consult with your pharmacist on any sort of supplement that you wish to take, I think, has a lot of relevance. I'm glad that was stressed.
Great. Good.
Well, Felix, thank you for the call. You are one of our very talented members of our pharmacy community here in the area, and we're deeply appreciative of your skill set. And absolutely, you know, he brings up a great point. It's important for people to understand that herbs are medicines, and to look at them from that perspective. And if you think about where we have developed our pharmaceutical medications from, almost the majority of medicines that we have these days that come from, you know, the pharmacy came from research based in plants. And we have isolated active ingredients and taken a look at these things. But plants are medicine. And it used to be all the medicines that we had were plant-based. And so these things are not to be taken lightly. And just because it's natural doesn't mean that it's going to be beneficial for you. And it doesn't mean that it may not have pretty significant interactions with other medications or potential side effects.
That's great. Thanks so much for your call, Felix.
Thank you.
One of the differences in modern life compared to 200 years ago is that we are now constantly hit by a variety of pollutants and chemicals in our air, our water, our food supply, cigarette smoke, industrial pollution, preservatives, additives. And these chemicals seem to create the production of free radicals in our body, which lead to oxidative inflammatory stresses that can not only cause and further disease, but can affect our aging and our longevity. How do you see free radicals as playing a role in disease processes, and what can we do with our diet and supplementation to counteract this?
Well, the free radical theory of aging is one of the leading thought processes in what leads to a slowdown of cellular processes, and the sum of that being getting older and aging. So, you know, antioxidants are very, very important, but it's also important to reduce the source of where the inflammation is coming from. And I think that's where the nutritional strategies come in, and reducing toxin exposure also comes in. So it's more than just, well, take some antioxidants like vitamin C, vitamin E, selenium, you know, those more common antioxidant type substances. It's a little bit more complex than that. It's also reducing that load of things that are very oxidizing to the system. Taking a look at the acid-base balance of the body, taking a look at the types of processed foods that you're eating. Again, your more natural foods are going to be high in these antioxidant chemicals, that they're going to give you a bigger boost. So when you talk about, you know, certain fruits like your berries, your other vegetables, you know, those kinds of foods are going to help you versus eating something that's more processed. It's going to add to that toxin and oxidative load.
And you have mentioned that just the act of processing of foods can really remove a great deal of the nutrients from our food chain.
Yes, it can.
And you've mentioned even whole wheat bread may not be whole wheat.
Oh yeah, the whole thought process about processed flours. And, you know, I think we have to consider a couple of things. You know, first of all, the majority of wheat in our food supply has been genetically modified. And so the wheat that we're eating now contains a higher content of gluten and has multiple copies of the genetic code for what is wheat. So we're getting higher amounts of certain proteins that can actually stimulate the immune system in a way that may, in some people, help to trigger autoimmune diseases. So, you know, we're learning about some of these things, you know, over time with sensitivity to gluten and casein and milk and those kinds of things. But the processing of the flour also adds certain chemicals for shelf life and preservative effects. We have things like phytates in our flour that actually help to block minerals like iron and zinc. So, you know, those kinds of things, we're not really thinking about that. We think we're eating very healthfully. But the more you get away from the nature's packaging of the food, the further you're getting away from good nutrition. Mm. And so when I tell my patients to consider increasing their whole grains in their diet, because research has shown that that's a healthy thing to do, the grains that we're talking about looks like a grain going into the pot and looks like a grain coming out of the pot. So I counsel them, you know, even though it says, you know, whole wheat on the package, that is something that has been processed. Mm-hmm.
We need to take a quick break for the news, but we'll be back with more of Health 360 here on WBOI in just a few moments.
A new study finds that when states pass Stand Your Ground laws, their homicide rates go up.
Perhaps there would have been a fist fight, and now because of Stand Your Ground laws, it's possible that those escalate into something much more violent and lethal.
Stand Your Ground laws and unintended consequences. That's today on All Things Considered from NPR News. That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. The Fort Wayne South Bend Catholic Diocese says its retired bishop has been diagnosed with cancer for a second time. The diocese says 80-year-old Bishop Emeritus John Darcy was diagnosed after he came down with nausea and a severe headache while in Boston for the holidays visiting family and friends. Darcy was treated for prostate cancer in 2011, but diocese spokesman Sean McBride says he could not disclose what type of cancer Darcy now has. Darcy retired in 2010 after 24 years leading the diocese when he was succeeded by Bishop Kevin Rhodes. Darcy continues serving as a chaplain at Bishop Lewis High School and other church activities. McBride says Darcy expects to spend 3 weeks receiving outpatient treatment in Boston before returning to Fort Wayne. A legislative committee is recommending using financial incentives to encourage child care facilities to meet minimum standards and to encourage parents to send their children to accredited facilities. There's been an ongoing debate on whether child care facilities associated with ministries should have to meet the same standards as licensed providers. In the past, attempts to raise standards for ministry-affiliated facilities have failed, primarily because of concerns it could blur the line between separation of church and state. But Republican Senator Travis Holdman of Markle, chairman of the Interim Committee on Child Care, is recommending new laws that would focus on requiring facilities that receive federal money to meet those same standards. He's also proposing giving tax credits to parents who put their children in high-quality facilities. The Fort Wayne Comets and Mad Ants enter a new year hoping for better results in 2013. WBOI's Doug Gruber recaps their season so far and looks at what we will see in the coming year.
The Comets stand in third place in the North Division, 4 points behind Toledo. Last Monday night, they disappointed the largest crowd of the season, 10,103, with a 9-4 loss to Toledo, the most goals they've allowed since 2007. Poor defense was the problem, and we might see some personnel changes for the K's in the near future. The Comets stay busy in the new year, hosting Gwinnett tonight, Cincinnati Friday night, to Cincinnati Saturday, and then back home Sunday against Orlando. The Mad Ants, with a 3-10 start to the season, dealt away two of their more notable players, Walker Russell Jr. and Jawan Johnson, their number one draft pick. They added Notre Dame's Luke Herangode, who's helped turn the team around. They've won their last two games and look forward to hosting the Santa Cruz Warriors this Thursday and Saturday nights. The Ants have only 3 home games this month, the 2 against Santa Cruz this week, and then they don't play at the Coliseum again until January 31st. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
And students from Northern Indiana's Culver Academies are preparing to take part in President Barack Obama's inaugural parade, an event that marks the 100th anniversary of the school's first inaugural parade appearance. Culver's Black Horse Troop made their first ride down Pennsylvania Avenue in January 1913. That year, the mounted unit served as the official escort for Vice President Thomas Marshall during Woodrow Wilson's inaugural parade. Marshall was governor of Indiana from 1909 to 1913. 59 cadets from Culver Military Academy's Black Horse Troop and 24 members of the Culver Girls Academy Equestrians will make the trip to Washington for the January 21st inauguration of Obama and Vice President Joe Biden. 90 horses will also make that trip. Now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sarah DeLito.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOI. The time is 12:48. If you have a question or comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page. I'm Sarah DeLeo, joined in the studio today with my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, as well as Dr. Angela LaSalle. She's the Medical Director of Integrative Medicine at Parkview, and we're talking about integrative medicines, vitamins, supplements, and how they affect your everyday health. We're going to go to a listener email, and it says, my 5-month-old was recently placed on antibiotics for about 10 days. Did this have a negative effect on the bacteria he's developing in his intestines? He is strictly a breastfed baby.
That's a great question, because we are starting to see some research that shows that children who have had repeated bouts of antibiotics may have increased immune issues, allergy issues. We are also even taking a look at some of the links into things like autism, ADHD, you know, those kinds of brain issues long term with children who have had repeated antibiotics. Now, most people these days don't make it all the way through childhood without having some sort of antibiotic along the way. And I think it's important that parents be aware that it's always good to follow up with some sort of probiotic supplementation after their child's been on an antibiotic. For a 5-month-old, I'd recommend that you check with your pediatrician to see what would be appropriate. And the fact that the baby's breastfed is a good thing, because also part of where we get our probiotics when we're infants and we're breastfeeding is from mom. And so it's important for mom to be on a good probiotic supplementation as well, that does help to restore some of that gut flora. Our initial inoculation of bacteria for the colon in life is when we come through the birth canal. So part of a good prenatal plan as well is to have moms that are, you know, preparing for childbirth and being on a good probiotic even before pregnancy. So that's a great question, and I would check with your pediatrician, and there's several factors to consider: how long are the course of antibiotics and how many times the child has been on an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. You know, one-time course, probably not such a big deal, but if it becomes a repeated problem, then yeah, I would definitely make a plan with your pediatrician.
Mm-hmm. And along the lines of probiotics, we have Eric online, one who has a question about them as well. Eric, welcome to Health 360.
Hi, thank you. I'm southbound on I-69, enjoying your show.
Oh, good. Well, drive safe.
Thank you. With respect to probiotics, I'm a 48-year-old male, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering about probiotics, males, and as we get older and males get into the years where they need to get their colonoscopies, et cetera, and some do and some don't. What are some of the colon cleaning products, and I guess with respect to probiotics and the colon, what's the life cycle like for a male where he needs to look into this a little more deeply? Again, not so much about colonoscopy, but the nature of the gut and what's going on in the gut.
Well, Eric, the time to look at these things is now. And I don't think it's a specific age range that we need to start considering it. We need to be considering it across the entire lifespan because, again, that gut flora is so essential to immune system function. And the earlier we begin good gut health and good gut ecology, the better time span that we'll have. And there's good evidence that a good balance of these probiotics may be disease preventative, even in looking at things like colon cancers and whatnot. So just waiting until, you know, the age of 50 with your colonoscopy screen to start thinking about a probiotic, you know, I think that really we should be doing that earlier. We should be doing it across the lifespan. So the other thing is probiotics need fiber and prebiotic fibers to help grow and attach to the lining of the intestine. And a great source of prebiotic fibers is our fruits and vegetables. So foods that contain soluble fibers, such as pectin and, other vegetable fiber and vegetable matter, the bacteria actually use that for food. And that actually helps them to grow and flourish in the gut. And then the bacteria in turn produce chemicals that actually our intestinal cells use for energy production. So when we talk about the whole irritable bowel question and constipation, the intermittent tummy discomforts that the American population puts up with, you know, probiotics are a really key factor in helping that. And having a diet that is plentiful in good vegetables and fiber-based, and unfortunately, when we think of fiber, we think of breads and, those kinds of things. But we need to think about our vegetables and our fruits. Average size pear contains about 7 grams of fiber. Well, you're not going to get that in a slice of bread. So it's important for us to consider what we're eating. And that leads to good gut health.
And along these lines, there have been some studies that taking calcium supplementation, calcium may actually bind some of the carcinogens that we get into in our foodstuffs and prevent them from causing further cellular damage. The other thing, of course, that goes along with good fiber intake is regularity and having things moving through your bowel. And there's been some question through the years of people with chronic constipation having too many of these chemicals sitting for too long in your gut. What is your position on that, Dr.
Sarah? That is correct. Absolutely. A good digestive process, does not include constipation. And unfortunately, in the American culture, we're very constipated for the most part. So that does lead to increased risks of diseases, especially in the colon and perhaps even contributing to colon cancers and other inflammatory-based illnesses.
And we actually have a caller online, too, who has a comment on traveling and digesting while traveling safely. So, Alma, welcome to Health 360.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I was traveling in Central America a few years ago and had a friend who I've always sort of been worried about drinking water from wherever I am locally, who suggested buying grapefruit extract, which you can get at any health food store. You can get it in Fort Wayne. I've done it a couple times. And basically, your water tastes a little different, but you can use normal water wherever you are. And it cleans the water and sort of lets your body process water that you wouldn't be able to necessarily otherwise, and sort of lets that flora and fauna that are natural to your gut, I don't know if be gained from elsewhere safely or how it works really, but it's a natural way of cleaning water, whether it's, you're worried about water here in the United States or elsewhere. It's a pretty cool way of letting your body do its thing and giving it a little boost.
Interesting.
That is very interesting. And, I know that there are different protocols for different kinds of things to increase the tolerability of a locale's water supply. I would still use caution because, I would still use a lot of caution. And while my personal slant on that would be, well, I might use the grapefruit extract to, help any accidental exposures that I might get, I would still be a little bit cautious when you're traveling, because there's a lot of parasitic infections and things like that that may not respond to the grapefruit extract. extract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I've had lots of bouts of that. But I've heard that it also helps with constipation and stuff like that you guys were just talking about, which is what reminded me of it. Mm. So I think it's like you use different levels based on what you need it for. But I think it says it on the label if you buy a jar of it at a health food store that can help with your body sort of its natural ability to reduce waste or get rid of waste too. So,
thanks for your call. Yeah.
One thing we must point out that grapefruit can block a very important detoxifying enzyme called the cytochrome P450 pathway in the liver. And this can definitely interfere with the metabolism of medications, so that people on a variety of medications should check with the package insert and with their pharmacist and with their doctor as to whether grapefruit is appropriate. But Dr. Weil has pointed out that excess grapefruit ingestion will block another one of our body's, the cytochrome P450 detoxification pathways.
Yes, it will.
Well, it seems like that's just further proof of moderation and checking in with your doctor to make sure you know what's right for you.
Absolutely.
We have one last comment that I want to make sure that we get in before we're done with today's program, which has just flown by. We have a comment from Joyce, who wrote in on Facebook that said, I recently read a book, Queen of Fats, that omega-3 has been removed from many foods in order to extend shelf life. And she was wondering, Dr. LaSalle, if you could comment on that, if that is happening, and what we can do to make up for those omega-3s that are disappearing from food.
That's a great comment, and kudos to Joyce for posting that. Yes, we are losing essential fatty acids in the processing of our foods, and our foods are also tend to be high in omega-6s, which disrupts the body's inflammatory balance. Omega-3s are a good anti-inflammatory chemical in the body, and actually help to improve our cholesterol balance, reduce inflammation. And inflammation is a common denominator to all of the chronic diseases. So all of the big killers, your heart disease, cancer, diabetes, you know, all of those things are very inflammatory, autoimmune diseases, very inflammatory based. So yes, we are losing part of the food's ability to reduce inflammation by having an altered fat balance in our food that we're intaking. Mm-hmm.
We have just about a minute left in today's program, and Dr. LaSalle, I want to make sure that if folks want to get in touch with you and the integrative medicine work that you're doing, that they have the means and the ways to get in touch with you if you want to give out that information.
Absolutely. There's some good information on my website. It's AngelaLaSalleMD.com, and that has our office information. Our office phone number is 672-6590, and we are located in the outpatient buildings there on the Regional Medical Center campus behind door number 3 on the second floor. Mm-hmm. And we are more than happy to work with clients in regards to preventative health programs. We work a lot on inflammation, hormone balance, and nutrition.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being a part of Health 360 today.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you.
This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. We're streaming online at NIPR.FM. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Thanks so much for listening today, as well as everybody who called in and wrote in. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.